Welcome to the Social Impactors Podcast. This podcast is all about impact. We work to highlight impactful individuals making positive social change in their communities. From coaches, authors, entrepreneurs, influencers, we tap into the minds of some of the most impactful people around the world to find out how they have built a life of creating impact. Now listen in and be ready to go on a journey of enlightenment, motivation, and awe. Social impact everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast. And today we have a special guest, Peter Jennings, and I'm going to let Peter talk about himself a little bit because I know he has an incredible story that I had the pleasure of reading about. But Peter, I want to first start with thanking you for taking time to be on the podcast today. And I'd love for you just, you know, explain a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Well, Avery, thank you very much for inviting me to be on the Social Impactors Podcast. Delighted to be with you. Yeah, I am an author. Previous to turning to writing books full-time, which was back in 2009, I worked in Toronto running marketing communications agencies. And I've been writing throughout my life, but upon retirement from my agency, I decided it was time to write for me rather than for clients. And what I do, Avery, is I write what I call, or what is called, creative nonfiction. Nonfiction being obviously true stories. Creative nonfiction being a slightly new skew on that genre, in which the author kind of adds something unique. In my case, I think I'm a very conversational writer. So my job or my aim is to write books that help people transform their lives. And really, I want to inspire them to capitalize on all the benefits that life can offer. So I do that by profiling people. And I take my reader kind of across the desk or across the kitchen table or on the back porch or whatever. And I write in a very conversational style so that they can kind of be part of the conversation and hear what the individual has to say. And as I say, my aim is to try and inspire them to grasp onto all that life has to offer. That's me.
That's amazing. And I'd love to dig a little bit deeper on the stories then. When you interview people, what are the types of stories you're looking for, if there is a type? And what kind of conversation do you write about?
Well, for instance, I have published a book called Why Being Happy Matters. And in that book, I interviewed 37 people from around the world on the subject of happiness. And I will say, I'm going to pat myself on the back here, Avery, because I'm quite proud of this label. Dr. Christine Carter from the University of California has called me a happiness expert. Now, this lady's got a string of degrees from here to Schenectady and back, and she called me an expert. Yeah. I kind of took her to task on that. But she said, you know what, Peter? I don't know anybody who's interviewed 37 people from around the world on happiness. I don't know anybody who's interviewed 7 PhDs actively studying positive psychology. And I don't know anybody who's put it all together into a book. So you, sir, are a happiness expert. And far be it from me to argue with the good doctor. So, you know, in that book, Avery, it really was beholden on me to talk to people, as I say, 37 people from Canada, the U.S., Asia, Australia, Europe, and find out how they were being happy in what I think are some unhappy times. Can I take a moment to share some stats with you?
Yeah, please.
Okay, because I think we're facing a real crisis these days in that the level of tension and stress and anxiety seems to be rising across the board. Let me share 4 stats. The number of people with depression, the amount of antidepressant drugs being consumed, and the rate of suicide are all on the increase across all socioeconomic levels. That's pretty serious. Unhappiness in the form of depression is the number one psychological disorder in the Western world, and it's accelerating right across the board. Thirdly, at the current rate of increase, the despondency and despair of those facing depression will become the second most disabling condition on Earth by 2020.
Wow.
Right behind heart disease. And that's in 2 years. And then lastly, in the U.S., for instance, depression costs the economy about $150 billion annually in terms of medical expenses and lost productivity.
Wow.
So we've got some pretty serious heavy duty stats there that suggest the world's not doing too well in terms of happiness. However, I do believe that happiness is an antidote to that. And that's why I wrote the book, to encourage people to become happier. And let me throw a couple of other stats at you, this being from the seven international PhDs who I interviewed. In general, they told me that happiness, here's what it does for you. It improves your outlook, it adds value to your days, and it enhances your peace of mind. Now, more specifically, what they told me was people who are happy, now listen to this, people who are happy make more money, make better decisions, negotiate better, enjoy greater levels of trust, perform at a higher level, have more self-confidence, and maintain higher quality relationships. What's not to like about that? So that's my job, to try and open people's eyes to the fact that, you know, we've got this. We can do something about the stress and anxiety everybody's feeling. And happiness is the antidote.
And it's funny too, that's not anecdotal at all. That is true measurements that I'm betting you found by interviewing these people. And yep. It's right there, right? I'm not going to say all. There are some chances where happiness is probably a very hard thing to attain. But generally, the concept of happiness is a shift in mindset, or support by community, and that's how you build this. And I didn't know that happiness had that much influence. I didn't, but that's incredible to hear that just simply being happy makes everything really better.
Well, and you're quite right, Avery. It's a shift in mindset. We all of us have the ability to choose to be happy or not to be happy. One of the people I interviewed in Oregon, she's doing work on discovering the happiness gene. And then it would seem that some people are born kind of hardwired to be happy. Some are perhaps not, and it becomes a little bit harder. But again, it's a decision. And the other thing I tell people, I do a lot of public speaking on the subject, and the one thing I tell people is, it's not rocket science. I mean, you know, you don't have to go out and spend a lot of money or commit a lot of time or whatever. It's an attitude. If you choose to be happy, there are things you can do to increase your happiness.
That's amazing. And I'd love to jump into the next question now, because I think it's a really good segue. And it's about you, specifically Peter. How are you making a positive impact in your communities?
Well, Avery, as I mentioned, I do a lot of public speaking. So I'm out usually two or three times a week speaking to provost clubs, rotary, business clubs, libraries, that sort of thing. And what I do is, the title of my speech is Seven Secrets to Happiness That Can Change Your Life. And it's based on my book, Why Being Happy Matters. So I am out speaking to groups and doing just what I was saying to you a moment ago, you know, convincing people that, you know, if you're not happy, you can get happy or happier. It's a decision you make. There are lots of things you can do, and I try and share that. Mm-hmm. I also, in my presentations, I introduce the audience to some of the people who I interview, and kind of talk a little bit about their lives and explain how they are increasing their own happiness. Some of them are hardwired to be happy, some of them aren't, you know. So between, I think, doing presentations and writing my books, that allows me to contribute to my my community. I'm fortunate in that I was brought up in a family who stressed volunteerism. In fact, we had a it sounds a little crazy, but we have a Latin motto to our family name, which is ut prossim alis, which literally translated means to put others first. I'm brought up to believe in that, and I do believe in that. So I've been very fortunate in my life. I've met thousands of people. I've made good dough. I mean, it's all been very, very fortunate. And so my job in my community is to give back whenever I can. And by the way, that is something that those PhDs I interviewed all told me, that when people volunteer, it does make them happier. So anybody who's out there thinking about, maybe there's something I could do for the local food bank or whatever, go and do it, because you will be happier for having done it. So between writing books and doing speeches, that's pretty much what I do in general, giving back to my community. By the way, my newest book, which is sitting with the publisher at the moment, and I hope will be out next year, is called Pushing the Boundaries. And in that book, I interview 30 people from around the world who kind of take risks that most of us won't take, or think outside the box, color outside the lines. People like Nick Wallenda, who famously walked across Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon on a tightrope. An amazing guy. And again, in the book, what I'm hoping is that people will read about these amazing people and not go and start walking across Niagara Falls on the tightrope and say, you know what, I can surpass myself. Maybe I'm limiting my thinking a little bit. And I want to be inspired by some of these people that Peter's written about, and maybe move up a little bit in my own ability to get things done.
Yeah. That's amazing. I'm excited for next year when you release that book, but I'd love to go back to the happiness one, because I have a burning question, a personal question, and it's the people you interviewed. Did they ever talk about a time when they were unhappy and how they flipped that switch to be happier?
Some of them did. Some of them are, I would say, just gifted with being generally happy. That's their outlook on life. But yes, indeed, some of them. I mean, I talked to one lady who was very near to taking her own life. She was suicidal, and she managed to come back from that. Now, in her case, what she did was she sold everything she had. She went over to India, joined an ashram, and had a total change of mindset, and came back, and she is now a very happy person and helping other people. Other folks who maybe were less happy, again, it's not rocket science. It's choosing to be happy. Fiona Vansick of Australia, she told me that one day she realized she was not happy enough, and she said, I made a decision, Peter, to get happy. And it starts with that. You have to say, okay, I'm going to get happy. And she did. Things you can do, surround yourself with happy people. I mean, if you're a group and everybody's down the dumps, you're going down with them. Yeah. If you surround yourself with happy people, it tends to bring your level of happiness up. I think the one thing that everybody I talked to told me in one way or another, be grateful for what you have, not what you don't have. And so many people will say, oh boy, my neighbor has a new car, or a new boat, or a whatever, I want one too. Well, you know, nothing wrong with aspiring to increase your holdings or whatever, but be grateful for what you have. Everybody told me that in one way or another. I think it's so important. Focus on what you've got, not on what you don't have. Happiness is a state of mind. It's a feeling. And Chuck Liddell, who is the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones when they go on tour, Chuck told me, you know what, Peter, let's be realistic. Life isn't always a bowl of cherries. There are always things that are going to happen to bring you down, but essentially you can't appreciate the highs without understanding those lows. So, you know, when you do come down, understand it and build yourself back up from there. And it's really important to do that. You know, another guy that I interviewed, fantastic, Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, who lectures at Harvard. Now, if we think of Harvard, we think of the Harvard Business School, Harvard Law School, Harvard Medical School. Do you know what the number one lecture is at Harvard? It's Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar's on happiness. Not meds, not law, not biz. It's happiness. It's the number one lecture at Harvard. And what he does, he lectures on the seven life principles of happiness. And when I interviewed Tal, I said, look, could I have your permission to reproduce those in my book, Why Being Happy Matters? He said, no, you have to come to Harvard to learn that. And I said, hey, chances of this little brain getting into Harvard ain't gonna happen. So he finally allowed me to reproduce the seven life principles of happiness in the book. And I'll share one of them with you. Again, it's not rocket science. It's actually number four, and that is to understand we're generally all too busy trying to squeeze in more and more activities into less and less time. Learning how to say no to others is learning how to say yes to yourself. So there are a bunch of things like that, you know, just pursuing what brings you joy, you know, looking outside and going, boy, look at the last snowfall of winter or the first rainfall of spring or whatever. So many of these things are simple, but it's a choice you make.
Huh. It's always about the choice you make.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And because we all know people who are unhappy, who are grudges. And indeed, the lady in Oregon who's doing work on discovering the happiness gene, I asked her, does that mean that there could be an unhappiness gene? And she said, well, great question. It's next on our list. Because perhaps some people are born hardwired to be unhappy. Now, again, they do have what's within them to overcome that. Perhaps it's going to take them a little bit of harder work, you know. I'm lucky. I'm kind of pre-programmed to be happy. I don't know about you. You got a great smile, Avery, so I'm not sure
you're a happy guy. Pretty happy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I'm sure you know people, and I do too. I mean, everything, the glass is always half empty, you know, the brooches. Well, okay, maybe they're hardwired that way through the gene makeup, or maybe it was an inherited qualification from their parents.
Yeah.
Whatever. But they've still got the ability to get beyond that if they want to work out.
Yeah, the one thing that we're always in control of, for the most part, is our reaction to actions, right? We're in control of how we feel about things. We're in control how we react. And we're also in control to the outcome of that, right? If that outcome is negative, it doesn't necessarily have to feel negative, right? You can admit objectively, yes, this was a bad situation. However, I'm taking a lesson. I'm okay with it. Right.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's taking that time to put things into a context, to understand it, to be grateful, to recognize that happiness is a feeling, it's a state of mind, and to accept, as Chuck Lavelle told me, hey, none of us are going to be happy 24/7, 365. That's unrealistic. But if you get down, knowing that you can pull yourself back up, that's what it's all about. And that's what I try and inspire people to do.
Yeah. So let's jump into the next question then. And this is about the business. So do you believe social impact is an important part of business?
I do. And I think people like you and me who have a voice, I think it's an obligation that we have.
Yeah.
To really get out and talk about, you know, things that we're talking about right now that do have a social impact. So I think it is part of a, you know, if you want to call it a business, sure. I think it's more than anything, I think it's an obligation and a responsibility for those of us who can inspire people to do so. You are doing this, sir, with your Social Impactors podcast. I hope I'm doing it with my books and my presentations and just talking to people like you, you know. I think it's really important. Again, the world just seems to be really burdened down by levels of anxiety and stress. I was in Toronto visiting somebody at Sunnybrook Hospital not so long ago. As I drove down into the underground parking, I looked up, And there's a big, huge building, a new building there, the Thompson Center for Anxiety. I was blown away. So I walked out and I walked into the building. I said, what goes on here? And they said, well, we're treating people for stress and anxiety, and we're studying it. And I said, but you need this huge building? And they said, oh yeah, we're actually adding another wing. So, I mean, that's how big it is, you know, it's huge. I don't mean to simplify things at all, but again, the risk of repeating myself, I see happiness as an antidote to that stress and anxiety. And I think it's important for those of us who can communicate that to be doing so. That's part of the social responsibility.
Yeah. And let's think about people, you know, that are suffering right now from you know, anxiety and stress and whatever that might be. What's your advice for them to begin building social impact or just general impact into their lives or their communities? What's your advice for them?
The advice is to first recognize that you are dealing with stress and anxiety. And whether that's being some people worry about, you know, what President Trump was doing south of the border, what's happening with Brexit overseas or Yemen or Syria or whatever, or just closer to the home matters, paying the mortgage, keeping kids in schools, dealing with older parents, whatever. My daughter-in-law teaches school in Toronto, grade 5, and I was asking her recently, how's it going? How are the kids? And she said, oh, they're all terrible. They're all stressed out. I said, like, these are 9 and 10-year-olds. Why are they stressed? And she said, well, because of their parents. Parents are dealing with stress. They're dealing with anxiety. They're dealing with FOMO. I was not familiar with FOMO. Do you know what FOMO is?
Yeah, fear of missing out.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that people are getting really over anxious about, you know, you got invited to the Smith party. I didn't. What am I missing? You know, relax, calm down. It's not that serious. You know? But that's what people seem to be dealing with. So I think it's, again, it's up to people like me and people like you to suggest that, hey, you're not as happy as you could be. I think that's really important that people need to admit that to themselves and then start looking at ways of changing that. You know, tell yourself that happiness is a state of mind and that you have the ability to change that state of mind. You have the ability to make a choice. Not everybody recognizes that. They need to be told that. You can make a choice. You can change your life. Again, simple thing, being grateful, not for what you don't have, but be grateful for what you do have. And surrounding yourself with happy people. Happiness is contagious. If you put a smile on your face, people around you start smiling too. It really is. It's contagious. So there are simple things like that. Like Dr. Tal Ben-Jahar said, learn how to say no. We're all too busy trying to do too much. Dr. Christine Carter told me the whole theory of multitasking. She said that's nonsense. Our brains and our bodies are not built to multitask. I was shocked with that. But she said, no, we are not built to multitask. Everybody's trying to do too much. So number one, knowing when to say no to somebody else is a good thing. But you also need to say it to yourself. She said, I mean, particularly with kids, you know, we've got them enrolled in violin and swimming and sports programs and this, that, and the other thing. Has anybody stopped to ask the kid, do you like playing violin? No. Yeah. Oh, do you want to play? I want to play guitar. Oh, well, then maybe you should be playing guitar and not violin. You know, simple stuff like that.
Yeah. Huh. I think some of the biggest takeaway and the best lessons I've had, and you highlighted it, was just to be grateful. Yes. Many times it's being grateful for what you have. And yes, you need to say no to things. But when you practice an attitude of gratitude, yes. Amazing things can happen, right?
Absolutely. Avery, I sent 2 emails recently to 2 people who have done small things, but it's made a big contribution to my life. Last year, I went through a couple of disasters, and there were a couple of people who really helped me. And I reached out to them and just sent them an email and said, hey, just want to thank you for doing X, Y, and Z. It really had a positive impact in my life. oh my gosh, both of them came back and said, wow, I didn't realize that what I had done helped you that much. Thank you for acknowledging it. So your attitude of gratitude, you're absolutely right. You know, too many of us don't do that. And it's really important when someone makes a contribution to your life, it doesn't have to be huge, but just to reach out, whether it's through email, a phone call, a message, whatever, and just say, hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. It really helped me.
Yeah.
That encourages other people or the people you've talked to go and do it to somebody else. And the two of you are happier just for that interchange. You know, it's little things like that. Again, not rocket science.
Yeah, not rocket science. That is true.
Yeah.
Peter, I want to thank you so much. Sorry?
I say the attitude of gratitude. I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's not coined by me. That's an expression, an old expression. But attitude, for gratitude, it's really practicing intentionality behind having gratitude, right?
Totally.
Yeah. But Peter, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. That was all the questions I have, but I was really looking forward to interviewing you because of the work that you've done in the happiness part of life, but also what you've captured. I had a little bit of time to look at what you've done with your book, and I want to read it, so I'm going to. But I love everything you're doing, and just thank you for exemplifying what a social impactor really means.
Well, Avery, thank you very much for recognizing that, and thank you for inviting me on the Social Impactors podcast. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and hey, keep doing what you're doing, my friend. You're doing it very well.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.